Welcome back to The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick with you from KERA in Dallas today. We bring you now back to New York for a moment, to the ballet. You're sitting in a grand performance hall. Dancers are moving across the stage to the music of Philip Glass. It's a beautiful spectacle of movement. The curtain goes down on the first act. The lights go up for intermission, and you walk out into the lobby with the rest of the crowd. And there, suddenly, more dancers appear, leaping and twirling among the crowd. Pirouettes at the concession stands, pas de chat near the bathroom line.
The dancers are dressed in street clothes, and they're on par with the audience. It also does change this idea of ballet as behind this red curtain.
That's the French-born dancer-turned-choreographer Benjamin Millepied, describing one of his new pieces. He's been trying to bring ballet out from behind that red curtain for years. His latest work premieres tonight on stage and off stage at the American Ballet Theater in New York City. Now, even if you don't know his name, you might recognize Millepied. He choreographed the 2010 thriller Black Swan, and he's become a major voice in the arts world with a mission to modernize ballet, including with his own contemporary company, the LA Dance Project. Takeaway producer Alexandra Botti sat down with Millepied at our New York City studios.
It's very important that our art form, stays really relevant, and I think the way that stays relevant is actually by work that's that has more depth, that has more meaning, that relates to this moment in time and the young people in a way that that's not superficial. So in a way, the tendency is, and you see it with film and television, even that we're living in a society of addiction, trying to create things that people get addicted to and come back to. And, you're often, even if you this whole idea of short content, and you're constantly told if you're making short content, even dance content, that you should present something quickly, in the beginning that, gets people interested. And, how do you keep them? Let's make it 2 minutes instead of 3 minutes and this and that. And it's just, I think that, ultimately what's really important is to create strong experiences for people and if anything, to go against trend, because I do believe that eventually this will change. So I just want, for an art form that is so universal and so important to me, and I think such a great way to keep engaging and, give us a better understanding of who we are as a society, needs more quality.
So you are bringing your newest work to the American Ballet Theater here
Yes.
in New York. Can you tell me a little bit about that newest work?
Well, yeah, I think I've been making dances for some time now, and I think being an artist and a choreographer is a process of getting to know yourself as well. We live through a lot of, life is full of emotions and experiences. And my ballets are a way for me to make these tangible, in an art form that's, ephemeral, fleeting in some way. That's for me, like making these dances is a way for me to stay sane to some extent. And it's just important, very, very important to me. It's not something that I take lightly. And this piece, as other works have been, is clearly influenced by, this moment, a particular moment in time, which is now, which I've found, for the first time, this idea that, the world doesn't feel completely, safe necessarily, or there's a sentiment of uncertainty that I choreographed a piece two years ago. It was right after I was working in Paris and premiered a piece in London. So I started to have this feeling. I lived in Paris at the darkest moment and premiered this work on the other side on the day of Brexit. And I think the end of the piece sort of reflected this feeling. And so now, this new work called I Feel the Earth Move, which I picked long before even some of the recent, environmental issues were going on, definitely has, you know, is in three movements and has a kind of, it's sort of an allegory for this moment in time with just symbols. It's not so narrative to the extent that, you know, I prefer to keep things, and I think it works better that way with dancing, you know, in my imagination, and create situations that people will read in different ways. But it's certainly his work that I imagine and that created that is a reflection of this feeling of uncertainty and the hope that I, you know, that I believe in, you know, as a, you know, as a father, as a two children, like, what if, you know, what if this, all of these years that I've, you know, that I've lived through were really just very lucky in this moment where I, you know, we didn't have this feeling of, you know, who knows what the next 10 years will be like, you know, whether it's the environment or whether it's political, it's things are uncertain right now.
That's interesting that you began when you choreographed this thinking about the uncertainty in Europe. And it carried over.
Well, you know, I mean, I was, so during all the worst terror attacks, I was working in Paris. And I resigned from the position there, started this piece, and it literally opened on the day of Brexit in London. And the whole ending of it is the sense of community and the sense of uncertainty in the last movement, which bewildered people. You know, they didn't know. You know, it's funny with ballet, you look at contemporary art and people have so many ways of approaching their work, you know, some have a very, very much a biographical and but with dances and with ballet, we don't, you know, there are many ways that an artist can approach his work. And in my, you know, from my perspective, and I think for me, it's very much an emotional journey. And you know, creating these pieces isn't just an idea that's far away from actually what I live and what I feel, and you know. It's a way for me to understand myself better, you know, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. How can we be communicating that to people who don't think that ballet is for them?
Well, I think the best thing is actually, you know, Stravinsky always said, I write my music for, you know, children's and dogs, you know, and they understand it best. You know, the idea of having just, you know, actually no sort of preconceived notions, and to, you know, and just have an open heart, and is the best way, I think, to read and understand and experience art. So I think, you know, in that sense, ballet is a very approachable art form, especially the fact that it's so connected to music. You know, there's work that's not enough, you know, that's experiment, that should be, you know, experimental. You know, ballet doesn't always have to be connected to music, but it is an art form that that you train to music. You know, you sort of, there's this whole idea of response and phrasing and expression of how you respond to rhythm and so forth, which is what drove me to it. You know, it's this, so between music and movement, I think it's something that is actually quite approachable to people. It's just that the dance, you know, ballet is performed, you know, in institutions and theaters that, for the most part, were made in the 1950s, at least here in America. So, you know, these are kind of temples of the arts that people from, you know, that some people just aren't comfortable going into. It's not how they experience the world. They want to experience the world today, or an evening out, or, you know. So there's this, I think the notion of having to, I mean, the world's so different than it was in the early 2000s. So you have to kind of, you know, you have to adapt, and you have to recreate the experience, you know, how to experience art. You have to think about how to get to, you know, bring some meaningful experiences, and you know, like that to people, and that maybe is by going outside the theater and or creating new venues. But ultimately, it's not about going in the direction of superficiality. I think the best thing to do in a moment like this is to actually present more meaningful experiences to people.
What does superficiality mean in this case?
Well, I think, you know, when you think of commercial, like, so this is exactly the example. You know, what's the goal? Just to get people's attention and to make sure that it's something, you know, this idea of addiction and try to put as much movement as possible with as, you know, many changes of direction as possible. Yeah. It's not, that's one way, or to connect it to, you know, an artist whose work, a musician that's not necessarily so great. And there's great artists who can collaborate with dance, and some people have done it very successfully. But I think, you know, you have to ultimately, it has to come from a very, you know, from a good idea and a good combination of artists to work together for a result that will be kind of interesting, not just to say, well, you know, that'll bring people into the house. I always remember there was, years ago, the story, New York City Ballet, we performed the work of Boris Eifman, so a Russian choreographer. And I think that the idea at the time was to bring, you know, Boris Eifman, who has this great Russian, you know, following, to the New York State Theater to see Balanchine. And hopefully the people who love Boris Eifman, who were so who came, so many, you know, at City Center would come to see Balanchine and fall in love with Balanchine. But the truth is the difference, you know, between Eifman's work and Balanchine's work is such that, you know, I think on opening night we presented Agon next, you know, the Stravinsky piece next to Eifman's new piece, which was a biographical work of Balanchine. And I think there was a Russian woman was so displeased with, you know, the experience of Agon that she started to complaining so loudly in the audience that she had to be walked out. And, you know, so it doesn't work that way. You know, you have to kind of, things have to, it has to be cohesive, and the experience has to be, you know, thought through, and things have to connect on a deeper level.
So I want to ask you about when you did go back to your native France. And you took over as head at the Paris Opera Ballet. And I want to know what you expected that experience would be, and then what you found it actually was.
Well, I think that there was always, I mean, you know, it wasn't just, I've been thinking about, you know, directing a company and for a long time, and I was probably, you know, which made me probably a difficult member of a company, because I was always, you know, thinking through everything that was being, you know, done to the programming, and you know, but so when Paris came along, I mean, I took it, you know, I'd already had my company in LA and for some time, and I just thought, you know, this is an opportunity. I can't really say no, because I know it's going to change my life dramatically, but I always wonder what it could have been. And the great thing about it is that it forced me to dive into the history of dance deeper, and the history of ballet, and specifically because I was going to run the oldest ballet company. This is where it all started. So it forced me to understand the past of and the history of ballet, and figuring out how to go there and actually, how do you make ballet significant, you know, now? You know, and the thing is, what actually ended up being difficult is that the past director, you know, had made great openings towards more conceptual dance and contemporary dance. And so in a way, you know, and Paris is used to seeing so much difficult work and very open-minded, and the houses are full. And so, you know, in a way, I felt that what was most important about that theater was changing the direction of ballet that it had had pretty much for the last, I'm going to say a very long number, but, you know, 150 years. Because I felt that truly since the Romantic era, ballet had evolved and progressed in other places but Paris. Even though it had this amazing moment in time in the Romantic era, and then, of course, in the Ballet Russe, but that was not Paris Opera. I felt that ballet had, you know, sure, there were things that happened there, but the truth is, you know, it happened at the Mariinsky, it happened in London, it happened in Denmark, and it happened in America. The most interesting choreography of the 20th century happened in other places. It was not created necessarily there. You know, Serge Lifar ran the company for a long time, and while there were great dancers there and who danced beautifully, he was not a choreographer on the level of, you know, Balanchine or Tudor or, you know, Ashton. And Bournonville and Petipa, you know, who all worked in other places and built the future, you know, built the future of ballet. So what happened is that the turn to actually change ballet there was too deep. It was too sharp a change.
That
it
you
was
brought.
Too deep a change that I wanted to bring for that company. That's when. And also the whole idea of, you know, ballet in the 21st century and the idea of, you know, having a diverse company, you know, frankly, there was a very old fashioned, even while I was there with a socialist government and, you know, this idea of Paris Opera being, you know, when I came, I said, you know, one of the first things I said was like, well, I can't run a company of 150 white dancers. And the response was, you know, that's what gives the company its strength. So there was very much, even within a completely leftist kind of government and, you know, people that I was working with, this idea that this company needs to be white because that's why it's so great, because the homogeneity and the, you know, so that's, wow, you get there in 2016 and you've, whoa, that's what these people are telling you. So, you know, that was a fight that actually I wasn't going to win because there's, you know, very, very complex rules. And so, you know, we were just on different planes, and ultimately, you know, the wear and tear, it means that what do? You sort of stick to it for 25 years and hopefully bring a change, but probably actually that you'll never get to where you want. And there was, I mean, and there was all other, you know, sort of structural issues and just from, you know, generations, decades of changes made by bureaucrats versus, you know, the company is amazing. You know, its tool is amazing. It has all this potential, but it just, in the end, it just wasn't for me, you know, and I think it was important for me to realize that, important that I felt very American and in the way that I am and that I like to, you know, enjoy my life, you know, and decided to keep my energy and come back to America and build the future, you know, of dance as I see it here. Mm-hmm. So that's the story.
And here you're working with your company in LA. And I wonder, I notice the ballet world, the classical ballet world as it exists, I would imagine still the Paris Opera, is very hierarchical.
Yeah. Right?
There are the étoiles and there are the corps de ballet, and there's not a lot of room for debate on that.
Mm.
Do you have a hierarchy in your own company?
No, there's no hierarchy in my company. I mean, I've, you know, the that way too. I mean, you know, ballet is a little bit of a, you know, kind of cultish environment. You know, it is. You know, it's a very closed and very quite cultish environment. But, you know, there's companies. I mean, ABT is a good example, who has a very healthy, you know, it's a very healthy environment. And dancers are really treated with respect, and you know, you don't. So there are exceptions, for sure. And I would say San Francisco Ballet is the same way, and Pacific Northwest Ballet is the same way. These are companies that I've worked with in this country where directors have a different approach than the kind of, you know, father like dictatorship that you know can easily take place. But no, I have no hierarchy because I'm not. You know, it's not. I'm not exactly building a ballet company today. I think I'm sort of creating while my dancers mostly are now ballet dancers, there's also modern dancers. I mean, you know, I'm interested actually in mixing people and mixing people of different styles. And I think I will take that even further in the future. Because it's interesting, you know, a lot of really interesting dance today is, you know, what I've been seeing in Los Angeles through, you know, the people coming out of the university is this, there's a whole generation of dancers who learn dancing from YouTube who, you know, has, first of all, you know, this very expressive way of, you know, of moving, because it's often, you know, the way you do that on your own and you explore it, you know, it's because these people need to move. You know, they, again, they have a kind of emotional pursuit, you know, reason for expressing themselves through movement. And they often have incredible musicality. They have virtuosity and ability to change quality of movement all the time. You know, when you've seen a hip hop and all of that. So that's all of these dancers who now are coming and are going to the universities and being trained formally. Actually, I think, you know, something really interesting is going on there. I recently have found some young talent, choreography talent, you know, that I'm interested to push and see where, you know, where things lead.
One of the things you mentioned is that you ran up against this sort of diversity barrier when you were in the Paris Opera Ballet. And I know that's something that the U.S. has struggled with as well. But now there's also a growing conversation around diversity in terms of choreographers, especially when it comes to women. It seems like the ballet world, in the U.S. in particular, is talking about why are there not more women at the helm of companies and making high-end great work for the big companies. Is that something that you see? Is that something you're addressing in your own company?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think, first of all, you know, it's specific to ballet. You know, there are amazing women choreographer in contemporary dance. You know, some of my favorites. I mean, Pina Bausch and Anna Teresa Kersmaeker. And I think partly, to be honest, is that, you know, ballet, you know, modern dance, you know, unfortunately, because ballet should be the same, has had a more intellectual approach to art, you know, to just, you know, and so I think women often have been more drawn to, you know, Simone Forti right now is, you know, at Dance Space teaching workshops. I mean, Yvonne Rainer. I mean, there's, you know, Twyla Tharp. I mean, there's so many great women choreographers. You know, when we come back, when you think about ballet specifically, I think there's a general problem with ballet that's not just about whether it's men or women. I think, you know, these women choreographers in contemporary dance, they've studied philosophy. They've, you know, they're intellectual. They're, you know, ballet, the problem with ballet, as I see it, is that, you know, the ballet schools only teach ballet. That is something completely crazy. You know, the idea is that the only purpose of these ballet schools is to teach people how to dance well. And frankly, most ballet dancers don't even know the you know, ballet history. You don't have a kind of, you know, understanding of the past of their art form. You know, so how do you, you know, how, even if you have talent, I mean, there was a remarkable debut at City Ballet just recently of an 18-year-old girl, by the way, Jenna Reeson, I think her name is, who's, you know, who just did a, like, actually showed great talent. You know, but how do you, you know, how do you just, yeah, ballet basically has suffered for decades of lack of culture within its community, you know. And the same goes on with opera, with ballet directors. You know, opera directors are much more educated, have a much broader culture of history, of contemporary art, you know, of society. And that's how you create a kind of, you know, at least a voice for your art form. So I think ballet, I mean, there might be more men, but it doesn't mean there's more good work. You know, I think it's just, it's important that, you know, you can't teach talent, but you can teach, and it's a responsibility to educate. And if ballet schools, on, you know, made that more part of their, mission, I think more women would be choreographing, more women would be interested, you know, and more men, and we would see more good work and a better level of work. I do think that, you know, some of the recent, you know, movement, I would say, in ballet, where you see choreography that is more complex, that is faster, that is, you know, you know, also has to do with the recent, some of the recent choreography we've seen in coming from hip hop and group dancing hip hop. I think I'm not going to shy away to say that there's a huge influence there. You know, that's actually doesn't come from the evolution of ballet, but from outside influences that we can see. But ultimately, it's not about, you know, how complex and how necessarily how original, you know, one can choreograph. Soon, you know, artificial intelligence will write fugues and counterpoint better than Bach could ever write it. You know, I mean, seriously, it's a, you know, art is about human emotion and what you know, someone has to say and someone, you know, expresses. So that's part of the, you know, the issue. When you see Pina Bausch, for example, there's a clear, you know, this woman had so much to exert. Some work is so emotional and so clearly transporting and so, you know, probably I often say that, you know, Orphe and Eurydice is the greatest narrative ballet of the last, you know, 40 years. But anyway, so I think that's where I think in general, that's the problem with ballet. And I think more women would be interested if they were exposed to, you know, the beauty of choreography as an art form, that it should be on the level of, you know, music and architecture and everything. And by the way, all of these other art forms are taught. You don't become a composer by just being a musician. You study composition. You don't become, you know, ballet is the only art form where suddenly someone that, you know, wants to become a ballet choreographer and they're, you know, and they've got to figure it out on their own. And some do very well, but
just trained as a dancer.
Yeah, trained as a dancer doesn't do it, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay, but I have to say there are some loud voices in the ballet community who are not really pushing the discussion in the same way. You might have seen that choreographer, Alexei Ratmansky. He's artist in residence with American Ballet Theater. He wrote about this very thing on Facebook earlier this month. I'm going to read to you what he wrote. "Sorry, there is no such thing as equality in ballet. Women dance on point. Men lift and support women. Women receive flowers. Men escort women off stage, not the other way around." And he says, "I know there are a couple of exceptions, and I am very comfortable with that," he writes. What's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, that's Alexei's view. You know, I don't agree with that view. You know, I think it's diminishing and unfortunate, you know, But you know what I will say is that that's Alex's way. You know what's you know, you have to create and express what you relate to and what speaks to you and what you know. You know, you can't, you know, there's been this you know, this whole idea, well, you know, we saw in the New York Times like last week at this first male duet, you know, in ballet, which is absurdity. Actually, it's a sort of embarrassing statement. You know, the male duets in ballet have existed 400 years. I mean, I saw my, you know, my first male duet when I was 13 years old, you know, in a ballet in France, with, you know, it was a Béjart's company, and it was, well, at the time, had some of the greatest male dancers, you know, in Europe, and it had a great impact on me, and just many, many people have done it. I think, you know, what we see by this push of, you know, which is important. I mean, I think people need to be represented and, you know, and yes, they should be, you know, but the choreographers who need to do it are the ones who actually, you know, have something to say about it and relate about it. You know, you're not, every filmmaker isn't going to make a movie about, you know, the Latino community or, you know, homosexuality or, you know, that certainly Tarkovsky was obsessed with like one subject his whole life, and Ratmansky should. It's not because, you know, it would be, you know, correct for him that, you know, he should really make the work that, you know, and maybe in 15 years he might evolve and feel differently and create something about, you know, it's just that we don't need to see, you know, two men partnering together and two women partnering together in every ballet on stage just because, you know, the New York Times says it's important. I mean, I think, you know, everybody has different things to say and they should create things that they relate to, you know, and that's what's important. And in that way, I think, you know, that's you know, appropriate that Alexei doesn't follow kind of a fashion to some extent, you know, because in a way I feel these young choreographers are just, you know, some of them are just trying to please, you know, please the press who's pushing in this direction. And not saying that it's not an important and relevant subject. I mean, absolutely it is. It's great that at City Ballet there's more male duets and there's more female duets, you know, but, you know, in a way, that's been happening elsewhere for a long time, for a very long time. Not ballet is growing. It's ballet is growing at New York City Ballet is what it is.
Right. Well, I was going to say it might tell you something about how we in this country see dance, if in fact that feels like such a big step. If the New York Times says that it's never been done, or it's been done so rarely, and you say it's been done.
Well, it's just simply not true. Mm-hmm. It's just simply not true. And, you know, even in Jerome Robbins' ballets, you know, which is not something, you know, there's moments of male duets, and there's moments, and depending on who is dancing it, and there, you know, you read things differently, and then might create a different emotion, and then things are more subtle than that. I mean, you know, it's my sensibility. I've made male duets and female duets for a long time. I've had women partner, but that's because I was interested in that. You know, so at some point, someone said to me, I remember I was a friend choreographer, actually. I was making the end of this piece, and I was really making this whole section where the man was constantly, you know, in very much in the way that ballroom dancing exists, the man is always directing the movement. And he kind of like looked at me and he said, I mean, come on. It was like, you know, really? Like, you know, this is the only way, you know? And it was just, you know, it was an interesting moment. You know, there are moments of that you realize, well, no. And then, so that's something that I've explored quite for a long time where, you know, obviously, you know, different, even in my ballet, like Daphnis and Chloe, at the time, the woman takes charge. And that's important. There's, you know, but also there's choreographers who've been criticized. For example, you know, like Christopher Wilden's been criticized sometimes for the way that, you know, the man's always standing, which is most Balanchine ballets, you know, standing behind the woman. And, you know, but I think Chris uses the body in a more, you know, abstract way at times, in a very beautiful way, in an architectural way. And that's what you can do if the man is partnering the women. And then, you know, there's nothing wrong with bodies becoming abstract at times. You know, it's not always about relationship. It's not always about... So this debate, I mean, I could go on with it for a long time, but anyway.
Speaking of sort of architectural thinking here, one of the things that you're also doing while you're here in New York is choreographing, or you have choreographed a piece as well that actually doesn't take place on stage.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yes, so I've been interested. I've seen obviously in modern dance a lot of site specific work over the years, and I started, you know, when I had my company, I was lucky to collaborate with Yuval Sharon, who just won the MacArthur
Genius Grant.
Thank you. Yeah. Very deservedly so, because he's brilliant. We worked on a project that I didn't choreograph at the time. Daniela Gami, an Israeli choreographer based in LA, choreographed, but that I helped produce at the Union Station in LA. And that was just, you know, this 1920s station built by a fantastic female architect whose name I don't remember. You know, he used the space as a theatrical space. Not only was it just—it's so great because you have both the inspiration and the restriction of the space. The space becomes your set. You know, we're always producing sets for the stage, which cost a fortune, and the world is filled with interesting, you know, spaces, which also are, you know, the moment you investigate these spaces, they're rooted in reality. You know, they're alive. People walk there every day. People, you know, light changes throughout the day. You know, there's all these elements. Like, the idea of using site-specific space for dance is great, and it brings people who don't come to the theater. You know, you have contact with a crowd that doesn't go to the theater. And so I really have loved it, you know, ever since. I've commissioned several works and done some myself. We were at Marfa and the 90 Foundation, you know, a few months ago, where I directed these live videos with my dancers. So, you know, the promenade at City Center, you know, I think of this jewel box of Balanchine and Philip Johnson, you know, as really kind of a temple for dance. And if you think of it, you know, it's, you know, I was there yesterday. I walk in and I walk through the stage, and there's a thousand memories come to mind. You know, I've spent so many 16 years there, and so many ballets, and so many people, and so many moments I've loved. And this place is filled with dance. And, you know, the promenade always struck me as this really interesting space, if not super functional space. You know, you have this giant, you know, opening, these wraparound balconies, you know, it's that people don't walk around, you know, you have, it's really, if you think about it, it's about people watching, you know, the choreography of, you know, of people and animation. Maybe that's what they had in mind, and possibly, who knows? But I looked at it and I thought, you know, how does the audience come out of, you know, an animation? You know, where would be the most interesting viewing point? And how can I try this? Just kind of create a dance that uses this architecture as a set. And that's what I did. I just made a, you know, 6-minute dance to Steve Reich piece, which is really this giant kind of 24, you know, counterpoint for 24 dancers that, you know, dance these phrases that overlap and sometimes, you know, are in counterpoint, sometimes in canon and sometimes in unison. And it's interesting because it just brings the attention to this architecture that we know well in a completely different way. And that's just one way of using it. You know, obviously you could set people all the way around the balconies and watch from above. You know, I was like, I'd love to watch a Cunningham Ballet from that point of view. You know, it would be so great to just like watch it from above on these balconies. Now, of course, I love to lift rocks that complicate life. You know, there's always unions and there's this and there's that. And there's like always, you know, always things that make some of my ideas more difficult. But we manage this, I think, well, and it'll be interesting for people to, you know, in a way, you know, experience dancing in a space that honestly calls for it. Probably someone's done it before. I just don't know about it, you know, there, but you know, that was my intent, and it also brings, you know, the dancers are dressed in street clothes and they're on par with the audience that's there. There's also the, you know, kind of the change. It changes the interaction between the seated audience who's waiting for current to go up. You know, it's not a participatory; it's very much a theatrical, you know, view. But it also does change this idea of ballet as behind this red curtain, which is nothing new. You know, I'm not going to say for the first time in ballet, there's, you know, the people have been doing it for forever. But in that theater and for ballet, it's now only for a few years. It's a fairly new idea. And I think it's not an important idea, because it's also, again, it's like the world is rich with great spaces. And, you know, certainly working at the Chinati Foundation was incredible. I mean, you can't think of a kind of more interesting place. And then you go at 10 in the morning and the light, it hits things differently than at 6 p.m. And, you know, and we worked there. It was short. It was a week. But there's so many opportunities like that. And, you know, it's all about hopefully being able to make them happen, because sometimes they are complicated, not for financial reason, but rather for, you know, the possibility of unions and so forth.
Do you want LA to be the new hub of dance in the world?
Well, yeah, I think LA is, you know, I'm really excited by what I'm seeing with this, the talent that's coming out of these universities. You know, USC is doing a great job, you know, with Bill Forsythe. Is, you know, there a lot, and it's kind of installed, you know, some of his dancers and really doing fantastic work. And you know, CalArts is now a new dean of dance, Dimitri Chambas, who's also installing a very progressive curriculum, you know, because you cannot train these dancers. You know, the idea that these dancers are going to have $50,000 tuition, come out of these universities and have no work. You know, frankly, how are they ever going to make the money back that they've spent on 4 years of studies in these contemporary dance schools? Yeah, so these students not only need to be great dancers, but they need to create the future of dance. And in order to do that, they need to be entrepreneurs. They need to understand technology. They need to understand the state of the arts, funding, the complications, difficulties, and how to reinvent it. Because otherwise, you know, I mean, I have a small company in Los Angeles, and how many are there? You know, you've had, for contemporary dance, you've got Arbert Street, you have, you know, not much. You know, there's some ballet companies that are in the, that are, you know, still financed by old families, you know, who still have a history and, you know, financing culture is part of their. But with the world and where it's going, people want to give to the ACLU and the environment and all of that. So it's very important that these universities change the way that they are training dancers and educating their dancers. But I see LA as right now having a moment. I think dance and urban dance that really, you know, comes out of a movement in society and in suburbs, and which has a completely earnest and, you know, express, you know, earnest cause and movement, and, you know, with this idea of creating this a place where we can incubate and we can mentor and we can, you know, could really have make, you know, interesting work could come out of Los Angeles. And that's exciting to me.
Benjamin Minpia, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Takeaway producer Alexandra Botti speaking with choreographer Benjamin Millepied. Millepied's latest work premieres tonight at the American Ballet Theater in New York.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.